Hi, everyone. I know everybody is ready to, in a hurry to go back for the lunch. I'll try to wind it up as early as possible. So I'm Naga Narasimha, and you can call me Naga. I would be talking about YARN 3.1 and the upcoming features which are there. So to give a brief intro about myself, I'm currently a Hadoop PMC, one of the Hadoop PMC, since a year or so. Contributing since 5 years as a contributor, then as a committer, and then as a PMC. So it's 5 years in Hadoop and Apache ecosystem. Currently working in, as a senior big data architect in Standard Chartered Bank in Singapore. Few of my key contributions to Apache Stack is in node attributes and ATS v2, which I'll be also touching upon on both of these topics. So I would like to say thanks to Standard Chartered Bank to send me across over here. Though we are not of the key stack providers, still, though it's like offline to our actual business, they were encouraging enough to send me across over here to present my non-office work over to here. So I'm very in gratitude to them. So it's a big bank, and it has its presence over 60 countries globally, and it's like one of the 100 largest banks in the London Stock Exchange, and it's also listed in two of the biggest stock exchanges in Asia. So this is a brief about Standard Chartered Bank. So less number of topics to be covered, like only three. Brief introduction about the project and what I'm going to do and what is the life cycle, the visual phases YARN has gone into. And present is the current version which is available in the open source is 3.1. I'll be talking about the features which were done in 3.1, and then I'll be going into the new upcoming features, and I'll try to give a brief about it. And more importantly, the reason for me being over here is one of the futures, upcoming futures in 3.2 is done by me. So I would be able to present it over here. So it's been a long journey. Earlier, it used to be like the main versions, the R versions, if you call it, were getting too much delayed, and a lot of 2.7s were coming out. Off late, in the last part of 2017, we started releasing a lot of versions. Usually what used to happen is the patch versions used very frequent, like once in 2 months, and at least one main release every year. But it's been a quite happening year since 2017, November to 2018 till now. We have a lot of versions which got released. To start off with, in November 2017, we did 2.9.0 with the key features being YARN Federation, wherein current clusters can scale up to 3,000 nodes easily, but Microsoft had very large clusters. They have like single node cluster to be around 10 or 12, and one big cluster to be around 40,000 nodes cluster. So to scale with the existing node, the existing architecture, it was difficult, so they came up with YARN Federation. Then to make the scheduling faster, they came up with opportunistic scheduling and containers to be named as opportunistic containers, which was backported from 3.0 to 2.9 because Microsoft was going into 2.9. Their clusters were of 2.9, so it was a backported version. More of UI monitoring and all was difficult, so new UI was got in. And Timeline v2, which I'm going to cover more, that was one of the features we came in 2.9.0. Again, it is a backported feature, first into 3.0 and then into 2.9. So next was like in December, like if you see, it's very running in parallel because of the different, the key players having different versions in their clusters. So in 3.0, very importantly, global scheduling, which I'm going to talk about further, which is like considering all the nodes and then try to schedule. And we have multiple resource types to schedule, not earlier, who are using now would be more aware, we're acquainted with. CPU and memory are the only two resources which are available, and everybody would be facing problem with the disks and all the stuff and the network. So what are the different types of resources and how adaptable it is and all, we'll be further talking about it. Some more announcements of the new YARN UI came in, and Timeline Service v2, I think I repeated it, copy-paste errors. Actually, to our timeline service, we too all, okay, to, as well as backported future, that's why it's there in both, sorry. Off late in April 2018, we gave a release on GPU, FPGA support in YAN. That's like extending the multiple resources and implementing for a few of the resources. And then we had placement constraints, which I'm going to talk about more. And this is the upcoming features, which is like 3.2.0. As we talk, we are getting ready to cut RC release card for 3.2.0. And that's what I was talking about. The key feature, like node attributes, is where I participated in for a big time. And multi-node scheduling and Hadoop submarine project, which I'm going to go in a little bit detail. And we have a lot of talks, which I'm going to mention about it. And service upgrade, like I'm going to talk about that also, like Kubernetes, how we can support multiple services, how easy for the users to get into YAN as a new application. We'll be talking about it. So this is like the timeline and what are the things which are coming up and which are already coming. So community updates, it's not just YAN. YAN is part of Hadoop stack, so it includes both. If you see, there have been a lot of, if you compare since 2.8.3, there have been a lot of changes. I've captured only till 3.1.0 because we have not yet completed, and there are key Jiras which are going to get merged in 3.2.0. As it is not completely done, I've not taken the stats of 3.2.0. But you can generally see the trend that there have been a lot of things happening since 2.8.3. That is to say, like since November 2017, there have been a lot of changes which is happening, and it's quite active. Community is quite active. So if you see in terms of file changes, there's been a huge lot of changes and a lot of contributions being done. I think nearly around 4,800 contributors or so we are involved in either reviews or contributing it or raising bugs, like a lot of participation is over there. And if you see lines of changes and deletions also, whenever you write some new code, you will have to delete it. So there have been increase in number of deletes also in the latest versions. So this is an overview about what's happening and what is the release, how the changes and how the traction is there in modifications and adding new features to YAN. So throughout, to categorize the topics which I'm going to talk about, you can generally categorize into two. One is user-centric and one is admin-centric. Whenever I say user-centric, like for the application developers or guys who want to make effective use of YAN, so what are the features which will help it out for them? So something like write node selection, like you want a specific node where it is local or of some particular hardware type. So how do I get it? How do I specify it? And ease of use, so how easily can I add a new service onto YAN? Like earlier you had to write a Java application to create the application master and then put it onto it. So how it has been generalized and how people's life is made easier, we'll be talking about that. Right resources to select, more and more when AI is coming to picture, we would require new kind of resources to be supported, like GPU, FPGA. So what kind of things which are getting supported, we'll be talking about that. And when you talk about the admin-centric, then you want to make the cluster much more effectively being utilized. You want it to be much more faster scheduling and much more easier to analyze what's happening with the cluster. I need to understand what's the states, like where my application is getting stuck. So all those things is what we are looking out in when I say like admin-centric features which are coming up and which are presently being there. And the last thing would be to ease of configuration, not only for the on-prem classes, also when you go towards cloud deployment of your Hadoop stack. I'm not sure everyone knows about it, so just to give a brief about how YAN's architecture is. So the key components are the key daemon services which are running is resource manager and node manager, and resource manager is like the key component, a single point of contact for all the guys for submitting the applications and interacting for getting the containers. So multiple clients talk to a single resource manager, and resource manager gets the information from of the resources which are being available to be scheduled from each of the node manager. And as and when the node manager comes in and says that, hey, I have this much of resource, then it goes through what all the different applications present in different queues and then tries to find out which is a suitable app and in with priority, which is the app for which I need to allocate the containers. So that's the high level part of it. And when the client starts off, it starts off application master. That's the one who is going to communicate with the resource manager for requesting for resources, and it's responsible for orchestration of its own containers. Okay, so in that way, MRV1 and MRV2 is different, wherein application master tries to take over the control of managing its application, and resource manager is the one which controls the overall cluster stats and allocation of the resources. Okay, this is a brief overview. And let's start off with the features which are present over there. So moving towards global and fast scheduling. The current problem was, like as I was explaining earlier, one node comes in and it says that, hey, I have this much resource, and then you start scheduling. So what happened if there are like 80 or 100 queues and each queue has n number of applications? In a large cluster where I was talking about 40,000 node cluster, imagine the number of applications which are running at the size of the queues which can be present. So if a single thread is running, just imagine the last guy in the queue, how much they have to wait, though the resources are available at the same point of time. And the code was written, as it is developed over time, there were a lot of logs, and it was not, there was a lot of rework to be done over there. So what got improved in 3.1? Look at several nodes at a time. This is basically like one node is coming, and then you're scheduling. So app, if it's already waited for n times, and then it is the last time before which it has to go to the rack local, so it is fits in, it stakes in, so it might not get the locality. But if you're looking at all the nodes at the same point of time, and you are aware that, okay, resources are available in all these nodes, then pick one. That would be the ideal match to best fit an application into the right node. So that has been implemented wherein multi-node selection while you are scheduling for an app, okay? Fine-grained logs, that's what I was talking about. Code was rewritten and reduced the number of logs and the places wherever it's possible. And one more important thing is, I'll go into the detail of it, multiple allocation threads. To speed it up, instead of having a single thread which is doing all the allocations, you have multiple threads doing the same thing. I'll be talking in detail about it. So with all this, we are able to see that the containers were getting allocated at 3,000 containers per second. Maybe container speed of allocation is not so important for the customers who are doing a batch kind of load, because a second's delay is nothing much. But when it comes down to ad hoc queries and very critical kind applications where in time critical stuff, like you're streaming and you want to launch an application and it has to be launched very fast. So in those cases, the speed of allocation of containers is very important. Okay. We were able to see 10x throughput gains with all these modifications and much better placement decisions as we are looking at several nodes at the same point of time. So the placement decisions, basically like rack local and node local, were better respected rather than doing when we are doing at one node at a time. So in the traditional scheduling, what used to happen is the scheduler used to start, like the single thread, whenever it gets a node heartbeat, it starts off with the root. And then when it goes to the next level, it will select, okay, which among these queues should I give the allocation now? So based on whoever is underutilized, it will pick that one, or there is a priority thing which has come in 2.8 or something, wherein you can prioritize which queues to get the allocations first. Okay, so based on that, it will pick the first queue at the next level, and then it goes to the same hierarchy in the next tree hierarchy of the queues. So what used to happen is a single thread is going from top to the bottom, and in each of the queues, leaf queues, there will be n number of applications, then it's allocating one application after the other. So what's the con in it? Obviously, like it's for a very large cluster, it's very much delayed. So the thing what was done was, what you do is multiple threads are doing at the same point of time, trying to allocate it, and the global general state is maintained so that whenever it tries to allocate a container, then it updates that this node and this queue, this much resources is taken. And if it, if for that node and that application, it's already given out, then it goes for the next app. So in multiple threads are running at the same point of time, and the same flow from top to bottom happens, but by multiple threads. So in this way, the speed of execution and speed of scheduling gets increased. And at the same time, the conflict resolutions and all are taken up. So the key question would be, how efficient is it? How many conflicts will happen? it's been tried and tested that it's not so much, and it has been effectively able to do it. As I was showing the stats, like it was able to give around 10x improvement with 3,000 containers being allocated per second. And this has been tried and tested, and it's already in execution in some of the main key big cluster, large clusters like Alibaba and Tencent. And in, if I presume, even in Microsoft, they are already using this global scheduling, which increases the speed of allocations by a large number of times. So support constraints for node locality. So like even in the last hour, where they were trying to understand that, okay, they didn't want to place the application in the same node where one of its containers is running. For example, like I've already ran a Spark container in this node. I don't want my same Spark container to be run in this node. If you run it, then the IO will get increased, then network IO can get increased, the disk IO can get increased. So you want to optimize it, and you want to ensure that the IOs are reduced. So you want them to be placed apart in different nodes. That's what we call it as anti-affinity. Basically, you are trying to minimize the resource interference. There are two kinds of affinity and anti-affinity. One is with respect to within an application, one is with respect to across the application. So affinities, you can talk about like across the application is very much important. So suppose you are having some, I'll go to the example in the next slide. And one more is cardinality, I'll talk about it little later. I mean, next slide itself. So basically, for example, affinity, wherein we can see across application affinity, wherein wherever I'm writing the data into HBase or wherever I'm writing the data, I want it to be together placed. I know a region server is also run on YAN. I know some application is trying to run, put the data into the specific region server. So if I'm able to put the Strum, like for example, if you're reading or writing through Strum and you want to have the local reads, then you can place the Strum containers with the same place where HBase region servers are running. So in this way, network traffic can be avoided. Okay, so that's kind of like affinity across the applications. Anti-affinity is like, I have two region servers, I don't want it to be placed in the same node. So that the locality of the data when you're writing into the region servers is spread across, as well as querying also, the network bottlenecks will not be there. These are the two things we saw, and there was another thing which I was talking about is cardinality. So suppose we go with anti-affinity. So what happens is, if you have a less size cluster, or you have like your cluster is running to the brim, so what happens is you can't keep it as anti-affinity when there are only 10 nodes and you have a 20 containers to be launched. You can't make it as anti-affinity. At the same time, you can't keep it as you want to make it as spread as apart. So the cardinality, what it tries to say is, you at the max place two containers in one node. So in this way, you'll be able to get that spread as well as getting to go with the existing size of the cluster you have. And it's not just for this purpose, even for the, the performance ways, instead of just spreading it across to everywhere, nook and corner, based upon cardinality, they were able to prove that resource utilization was more optimized when you were able to say that particular set of containers can be run in a single node. So it was basically done by Microsoft, wherein they tested this and then they went ahead with it. So this was these are one of the key features in 3.1. So absolute resource configuration is in terms of like you want to configure. It's more like admin-centric feature which has come in. So in a traditional on-prem clusters, you know, it's more like a static state wherein your nodes are not getting added every now and then. So you can easily configure, okay, this is the total cluster size and my resource for a given queue is like 60%, 40%, and 30% and 10%. So it's easy to specify in terms of percentage when it's a fixed cluster and it's not scaling and scaling down frequently. But when you go into the cloud and wherein dynamic allocations and dynamically adding nodes are coming into the picture, you can't have this kind of static. Even though you would be able to easily add one queue, but if you want to create one more queue, changing on the fly, setting this percentages such that everything fits in properly so that all the minimum resource percentage sets into the 100% is very difficult. So what we came upon is like Lifeware scheduler, which already supports static resource specified for each queue and then allocate. So the similar thing was got into capacity scheduler also. So capacity scheduler supports both modes now. Either you can make all the queues to be supported in percentage-wise stuff, or more cloud-centric, you will be able to specify in terms of resources like memory, so much memory, so much GPU, and as I was saying, multiple resources can also be specified. And one more use case for this would be like maybe all queues will not require the GPU resource. So instead of going and specifically saying, when you're saying the percentage gets applied even for the resources which you're not going to use. So with more and more things coming like this, it's more imperative to have queue-specific configurations. So only the specified queue which requires to use this resource can be specifying the resource, how much it requires. Okay. One more thing was auto creation of leaf queues, and who are using Phase Scheduler, they already know that it's implicitly supported. But Jan was not supporting it, and we came across a lot of people asking for this, so we added this feature in. Basically, what happens is, given the user's name or the group name, queue was getting dynamically being placed. I mean, application was dynamically being placed in the queue. So at the same time, we have supported like dynamically a queue gets created, and that queue needs to be mapped under which managed queue and how much resources to be given to it. More so in the percent, like if you have already allocated 50% to one managed queue and a new user is coming in and you want to have a separate queue for them. So under this managed queue, you can configure such that every new queue which gets created under this managed queue, give 10% to it. So what happens is, instead of just placing currently in the default queue, you give the resources you allocate 10% of that queue, parent managed queue's resource to this newly created queue, and then you place it. So what happens is that the users who are not configured and submitting once in a while will not fight for the resources. They'll get their own queue, and still resources gets placed. And as well as like when this queue is utilized and gone off, there are policies to set like when to clear up these queues, and also the ACLs will be taken care of so that other users will not be able to put the applications in this newly created queue. Based on users or its groups, you'll be making use of it. At the same time, this feature is available for the users as well as the groups also. Like this group. Specifying the placement constraints, you can say that this group is not getting mapped to anything, so which queue to create for it. I mean, basically based on the group name, your queue will be created, and then it will be getting submitted. So as part of UI, a lot of improvements have been done. Like if you have seen the old UI, it's like very difficult to analyze it and understand the state of the cluster. So coming to the new UI, we are able to see the very good cluster-wide view in a lot of, pie graphs and so. So you'll be able to find out which are the most used applications and how many applications are finished, how many applications are running, how much is the load in each of the, what are the node managers available, how many are healthy, how many are unhealthy. Very easy to view and very easy to understand the whole state of the cluster with the new Yarn UI. So another view is like trying to read the applications. Earlier, just a tabular structure having all the applications. Now, how many applications? In a more viewable format, you will be able to see this cluster state. Earlier in the previous session, what was there, each company was trying to come up with their own way to understand how the applications are running in the cluster, how the usage trends are happening across the time. Maybe if you take the MapReduce, you'll get the max utilized memory or so at the end of the cluster. You'll not be able to get at each point of time what's the state which is happening. Unless and until you are capturing the state container metrics or the MapReduce metrics at each point of time, what is happening. So what will timeline servers provide for each kind of an application? you will be able to gather all this information on the fly inherently, like from the Yarn system itself. So for each of the container, they get the stats and they try to store it in a distributed storage, and each node manager is sending across the information for all, each of the container which is running under it. As well as users will be able to specify the DAG kind of the structure from which node, how many have, like usually what happens is one application, multiple applications are submitted for the overall achieving one pipeline for it. So you want to gather the statistics or how much exactly the overall resource usage is required for this overall DAG. So these kind of stuffs can be achievable using Timeline Service V2. So using the same feature as tags, node attribute tags, application tags, wherein you can specify the relationship between multiple applications, and then for this tag, you'll be able to identify how much resources have been used, and you'll be able to plot also what is the usage of all of the applications which are running under this tag over a period of time. So a lot of things are happening, only the base structure is in. So further going ahead, you will be able to see a lot of stuff over here. So currently, it is usable, but it's not, I would say that, like, visible. A lot of integrations is happening with the new UI. So based on that, we will be able to see the cluster utilizations in a much better way, like the fancier graphs, what we saw in the previous session, wherein we'll be able to understand the usage of the application at any given point of time. So coming to the different resources, a lot of new resources, like depending upon why the cluster is being used for, a lot of things come into the picture. Like if it is AI and machine learning based, you require GPU and FPGA to process the same data repetitively, and it will be much more faster executing on top of GPU and the same workload being run only in CPU. And then performance will be much more optimized if it is run on top of GPU and FPGA. So that's where the overall need came in. And when we took this in, there was like the code was very cluttered. Like to add every new resource, it was becoming very difficult. Like I'm not sure how many of you know that whenever you are requesting, you request in terms of resource object. Like you create a new resource object and specify memory and CPU. So every new thing gets added. We were modifying this class. So what if like only some of the resources are present in the cluster? So to address all this, a lot of changes came in so that it's easy to add a new resources into the Yarn cluster, or you can exclude some resources or add specific resources. As and when there are more resources which are coming into the picture, which is easier for admin to specify, but when it comes to users to use it, it would become very difficult to say. So kind of we introduce a feature called as profiles, wherein you request in terms of the cloud, like you will say, I want a bigger node, I want a smaller node, I want a very large node. So based on your resources, you should be able to specify what is the type of profile. And it's configurable, it's not a static one, small, medium, large, it's just an example. Based upon what is the cluster, admin can decide how they want to place it. So GPU support on Yarn was one of the key features which I was trying to say. So Dockerized came in 3.0 itself. So GPU support was tied in along to it. So in general, the question would be like, why do you require GPU to be GPU apps to be run on top of Yarn when there is already existing clusters and they have a separate clusters to be wherein all these kind of AI or machine learning intensive applications are run. So but the problem would be our general approach, even if I see in StandC also. So the data is copied from your data lake into a replica of the data is created, and then you start running the GPU or AI or machine learning intensive loads on top of this duplicated data. So you are losing the time and you are losing the resources to do this operation. So if you have the same cluster which is capable enough to address this, so you're not duplicating the resources and the same cluster is able to address AI and machine learning kind of workloads too. So that's the need for supporting GPU resources on top of Yarn. So how do we support GPU isolation? Currently, like we would like to have a single GPU serving for multiple containers, but isolation is like C group support is not there, wherein we'll be able to segregate the loads for segregate the loads which are running on top of GPU for multiple containers. So either give it for all or for one of the applications. Currently what is taken is a single container will be able to lock one GPU device and it will be able to run completely on it, and then you go to the next applications which can make use of the same GPU device. So basically we are using C groups and Dockers. Basically the Docker application is configured on the C group so that you will be able to get this functionality. FPGA isolation is catching up. I don't say that it's like the most frequent use case, but FPGA device is also catching up, and we are using the C groups itself to enforce the isolation. Currently, OpenCL SDK, Intel's SDK is the only one which is supported, but it's implemented like a pluggable SDK to be adopted for FPGA devices. And more importantly, like going more towards there is a lot of traction towards Kubernetes because it's very easy to place applications onto Kubernetes. Like it's just a simple YAML file. I'll specify, okay, this is the Docker I want, and this is where I want to place, and this is the, what do you say, number of instances I want. So similarly, there was a need to place applications even in YARN. So that is where earlier there used to be projects like Slider, and one more is there. I'm not able to recollect it. Something starts with the Apache project itself. So they were kind of providing this service layer on top of YARN. So basically as these requirements increased and it was imperative to have a native support of services to be launched on YARN in a much more easier and user-friendly way, wherein people can just define XML-based stuff to define, okay, these are the number of instances I want, please run it in the cluster. So that is when this native services came into the picture. So more so it's like Slider was modified, and Slider project got merged with YARN. So that's how this native services got supported. So and whatever services which were running earlier on YARN should also natively get supported through this native services. That was also taken into consideration. So when you're running applications like this, it's very important that each container communicates with each other container. So that's where domain and server kind of concepts are very important to have, wherein a container comes up and says that, oh, hey, people who wants to reach me out can reach me at this IP address. So this IP address gets stored into the DNS, and the other guy who's coming in can be easily get looked up on the data which is present in this DNS, and based on the key, and then they'll be able to get connected to each other. Basically, like if you take the region server instance, like all the region servers should be able to know where the master is running so that they communicate. So it's also very important that it should be able to upgrade. Think of like you have a HBase server which is running in the cluster using the YARN native service. So you want the next version of HBase to be added to the same HBase application which is running. So it's very important to support the upgrades and the rollbacks. So basically that's what is getting supported as part of 3.2 in a very short span of time. We'll be going towards it. So we need to support application service in terms like whatever Kubernetes or any other Mesos is able to do. Similarly, YARN is also moving towards that, and a complete solution wherein native services can be run on top of YARN. So it's like similar to the YAML file, it's a JSON file wherein you'll be able to specify what is the resources, what are the number of containers, and what is the launch command. And you can launch it along with the Docker or a simple command also. So there are a lot of things which are coming in. What are the features, what I was talking about, like container, cardinality, affinity, anti-affinity, displacement constraints, all will be embedded into this. And further ahead, you would be able to see NiFi running on YARN. You should be able to see Kafka running on YARN. You should be able to see HBase running on YARN so that any version of HBase can be, any version of an application can be put on top of an existing YARN framework itself. So new service UI would be looking something like this. So you give it, define a name, which queue you want to run, what is the version of the service, how long you want the service to be run. So you need to take care, when you're supporting this, you need to take care of the logs to be also available, and it should be easily accessible. And what are the service configurations, what Java version you want, and all those things, like all the resources which are required for it, you'll be able to specify. Easier thing to do is have a Docker and then do it. Even if not, you don't have a Docker, you will be able to launch by specifying the resources you require for this application and specifying the command which needs to be launched. So these were the stuffs which were there as part of the current releases. Let me try to finish as quickly as possible for the next set of things which are coming up. So this is my topic, and this is why I'm over here, more so to tell about what stuff which I did. So basically, what is node attributes and how is it different from the node partition or the label, what is existingly available? So if you say node partition, you get the control of the resource being associated with that partition also. So when you say resource is associated with that partition label, you can't have two labels to be associated with the same node. Because if you are trying to allocate for a particular label, but you need to detect it for the other label which is there with that node also. And it becomes so crazy that if you start having multiple labels on the same node and you are assigning a resource only for a particular label, you'll not be able to control it. And maybe you will not even require resources to be isolated for a given label. You just want the label to be there so that you can easily pick, this is the node which I want to go to. So that's when attributes comes into the picture. Wherever you want multiple labels to be present on a node, and then you want to place it, okay, wherever GPU device is there, go run on this, on that node. So that is where you will make use of attributes. I'll come to the use cases part of it. There are a lot of use cases which you can make use of node attributes. So ACLs are coming into picture when you're doing node partition, wherein only specified set of users will be able to use that label, because label is associated with a queue and queue is associated to a user. So in that way, they'll be able to specify which users will be able to use a particular partition. So attribute, there is no ACLs, there is no shares, there is no resource isolation. It's just a naming of attribute and you being able to tell that, okay, I want to go and get my application placed in that node which is having a particular label. So it's a first come first serve basis, and it's kind like you either get this resource or it gets waiting till that label is available. Okay, so these are the main difference between partition and the attributes. So the key thing would be like, if you talk about the clusters which are of 3000 size, admins cannot go and configure for each node what are the set of labels to be applied, and it's morely error prone, wherein applications cannot, I mean, you can't start tagging the node with the attributes manually for such a large clusters. So it was very much important to require to start supporting distributed node attributes, wherein a script or a configuration is available on the node, and that node is communicating to the RM, and it's able to say that these are the attributes which are associated for this node. So that's the key thing over here. We had to support both. It's not either of the one. In case of partitions, it's either of the one because it's only associated with one. So it was very important to support both, wherein admin will be able to on the fly specify a particular thing, and as well, based upon the script or the configuration of the NM, you will be able to specify this node has what attributes. Okay, I'll come to the examples which wherein we can say that where it will be useful. Okay, what are the use cases? Like I want to submit my applications and run it on the nodes which are having a particular device like FPGA, GPU. And if your multiple queues are there, it's better to go for partition. But if it is only few, it would be better to go for constraints like this. If you want to make use of the same node to be available for other non-GPU resource also, then you can go with hardware constraints, wherein resource guarantees are not purported, but you will be able to make use and go to the specified node itself. If you are doing any I/O intensive work, you will be able to specify that put me to the nodes which are having SSDs. If you have a heterogeneous cluster, you will be able to say that give me on the nodes which are having SSDs, or give me on the nodes which are having multiple disks. Because in a lot of cases, when you are doing a pipeline or batch based ingestion, so if and you are trying to aggregate it and do something parallelly working on the data, then it would be critical to have these applications run on nodes which are having multiple disks. So infinity band, whenever there is shuffle happening, it will be much more faster if you have infinity band. And I have come across multiple cases wherein only a few of the nodes have double networks, like private network and the public network. So you want information to be gathered, like example, Spark needs to send the status of the current application. So you want the AM to be running on the node which is available in the public, which is connected from the public network also. So in those cases, you will be able to say that launch my AM in the node which is having both the network cards, and all of the containers can run wherever it wants. You can also say that other kind of requirements for this node attributes would be like, I want to run my application in Java 8. I want to run my application in Windows only. If it is, it's rare, but if there is any chances that you have both Windows nodes and as well as Linux nodes, or you can have a variant flavors of the Linux nodes, you want to run your application on specific OS, then you will be able to specify. Similarly, like process architecture, and more importantly, is the software libraries wherein you have a specific version of the Python and you want to get it placed in a specific version of the Python, then you will be able to do it. More so, people use the Docker approach wherein they create their own set of libraries and then they use it. But suppose you don't have the Docker support or you don't have that functionality yet, then you can tag your resources, tag your nodes based on which version you have, then you will be able to place your task into it. More experimental would be something like based on the dynamic attributes, like I'll write a script such that I label this node wherein you can say that it is heavily utilized based on the load average, based on the disk usage, based on the network. There are a lot of commands in the Linux wherein we'll be able to get the stats out of it, and you can have some kind of an algorithm or a script which can say that this is heavily utilized, which is lightly utilized. You can say it as an anti-pattern wherein you would like to have each of them as a separate resource. Till you are not able to isolate all of these things, you can think about dynamic attributes wherein the script, based on the script's output, the node gets tagged whether it is heavily utilized or not, and based on that you will be able to place your container. Okay, so this is kind of an interesting stuff which you can get it implemented if you have node attributes. So one more important thing would be that container overcommit. Most of us know the scenarios wherein the actual cluster utilization will be like maybe like 1/10 of the resource stats which is shown by Yann, but still all the applications are not able to make use of the cluster resources. Few of the reasons would be there could be skewness in the resource usage of the applications, because of which you have to specify the largest size. And could be the scenario which is totally determined by the dynamically based on the load of the data which is coming in. Maybe the data is very skewed, so you'll not be able to determine beforehand and you require it. So you, and it's like safe for the application developers to say the larger amount of it so that they are not worried about it. So in those cases, what happens is actually the resources are available, but the cluster size is just shown up, it's getting utilized. So this feature, which is not yet completely completed, we are expecting it to be completed by 3.2, but unfortunately it's not completed, which is a very useful feature, wherein whenever you see that the cluster is more or less fully utilized, but the actual resources are not yet utilized, you start one more thread and start allocating, not the guaranteed containers, it's the optimistic containers. So what happens is, if you're okay to be launched and you're okay to be killed when it is actually the resources are very high, you launch the containers in a separate thread for this non-guaranteed allocations. And whenever the actual resource is going very high, you start killing it and allowing the guaranteed containers to run in completely. So basically preemption, the same way you are doing for the queues, similarly happens within a node level also for the overcommitted containers. It's very useful feature. Once it's in, it will be very useful to get your cluster usage or unnecessary increasing of the cluster size. Auto-spawning of the system services. More so is the case like the real requirement wherein it came in as is the ATS server, wherein I was talking about earlier, wherein all the cluster stats is stored in the one distributed place where that's nothing but your HBase. So you are the HBase which is required for the ATS for some higher version, and suppose your cluster is of a lower version of HBase, then there is a conflict. So you need to either spawn a separate service and separate monitoring. But if you take the HTTP stack, usually you don't have multiple HTTP services to be run. So there was a conflict wherein there could be a chances that HBase, which is going on as the overall cluster stack, is a different version from the HBase which is required for the ATS. So that was the need wherein we already support the YAN service. So the specific HBase version is launched as and when the RM starts up. So that's the need for this, you could say as the need for this requirement. You can see it as an init D of YAN, wherein as and when the system starts up, the daemon services run. Similarly, as and when the YAN RM starts up, these daemon services are run. So you can have something like a sync and an async, if you say. Sync is like RM will not come out, make it itself available unless all these services are started up. Async is like, okay, it starts off, but the YAN goes ahead and makes itself available for applications to be making use of it. TensorFlow and YAN, given the time, we are going short. There is also a lot of talks which are happening on TensorFlow and the GPU FPGA. I'll talk about who is presenting it and all. So it's very simple based on YAN service and the Docker support. You will be able to specify, run this application in this particular, YAN native services path, which I'm pointing out over there. So in a simple way, you will be able to launch your PySpark jobs or Python jobs onto the cluster. So this is kind of that YAN service file, the native service file which we are talking about, like what are the components, what are the workers, and it makes use of the DNS and all those stuff. And these are the key important talks which you will be able to see, like the veterans of YAN, like Wangda and all are going to present it tomorrow. It would be a really interesting topic if you are in the machine learning space, how you can make use of the existing YAN clusters to run your TensorFlow or MXNet or any machine learning or deep learning related tools on top of the existing YAN clusters. A detailed overview of the submarine project, which they call it, and he would be talking about it. So these are the two different topics which he's going to cover in the later part of the... Any queries? Anyway, I think everybody's eager to go out and have their lunch. Okay, if there's anything, I'm around here, you will be able to ask. Yeah?
For the GPU support, it's going to be able to support multiple GPUs in single now?
Yeah. As I was, I think I missed it, like current GPU support is kind of like per GPU, per container. So multiple GPUs in the same container, you'll be able to say that you'll not be able to allocate the same GPU to multiple containers, but for each container, how many GPUs you will be able to specify?
Imagine running different type of applications, HPs or Kafka,
Storm, Storm, is that available already? No, not yet. I mean, you can do it. It's not like natively supported. Okay. You have to write your applications, the YAML files, whatever I'm talking about. Okay. Somewhere at the top there is a YAML file which I showed. The services are there in 3.1.0. So if you are able to write this file and create a Docker image for it and you are able to launch it, you will be able to do it now also. Natively as such, it's more so like it's not the role of YAN to do it. It's more so like the provider or the team which provides, platform team which is providing, they need to do for it. If you talk like, does the HTTP support it? I can say it's no. They are not at come to a point wherein they can launch the HDF cluster onto the HTTP itself, which is what even I'm looking out for. I don't want to have a separate set of clusters for my NiFi to be running. I want the NiFi to be running on the existing set of clusters. If required, I'll add one more node to the existing cluster rather than adding one more, create a separate cluster to just have NiFi. We are also looking towards it, but it's going in that direction. So you can push your vendor to have it.
But you also mentioned Slider being integrated with the YAN.
Yes.
For any Slider application, we need to
I need to go into the details, like how much they are supporting natively, like any older Slider XML can be directly put in, or there is some kind of tool which converts it and then you can make use of it. I'm not so clear about the details of it. If you put down a query to me, then I can go back and look about it and then I can respond to you. Exact details, at this position, I'm not able to answer to it. Any other questions? Any other queries? Okay, thank you. Thanks for spending your time.